Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and you're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. Our guests today are Robert Wheeler, biographer of Jim Thorpe, the world's greatest athlete, and William Thorpe, the surviving son of Jim. In 2012, the Olympics will commemorate the 100th anniversary of Jim Thorpe's achievements at the 1912 Olympics in Sweden, where he won the gold medals in both the decathlon and pentathlon. The medals were stripped from Jim after accusations of him being a professional. Years later, mainly through the efforts of our guest, Robert Wheeler, those medals were restored, and Thorpe's records and good name were reinstated. However, here we are today, and there's yet another controversy surrounding Jim Thorpe involving his final resting place, and we'll talk about that with our guests. Bob Wheeler and Bill Thorpe, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Hi, glad to be here.
Thank you, Cindy.
Okay, so most of the questions I have, I am going to be either addressing Bob or Bill, and since we have three people on the phone, it'll be just better if we just answer one at a time anyway, so we can, you know, the listeners will be able to clarify who's speaking at the time for sure. So the first question is going to be to Bill. And
okay.
before we get into the present controversy regarding the final resting place of your father, Jim Thorpe, I would like you to tell us about who your father was, about his public image, his place in history, and who he was to you as his your father.
Well, he was. Dad was a great man, one of the greatest world athletes ever. He participated naturally in the Olympics in 1912, the decathlon and pentathlon, winning both. The only man in the world to ever accomplish that task. Dad was a very happy-go-lucky individual. He was very strict with us kids. He put us put the belt to us whenever it was needed, which is was good in those days, I guess, but not these these days. But he worked very hard to accomplish the task that he's famous for, and I think. That's about what I say, I guess.
Okay, thank you. And Bob, as a biographer and author of Jim Thorpe, the world's greatest athlete, you have been an ear witness to a great deal of what has gone on because you talked to many family members, friends, and others who knew Jim Thorpe but are now passed away. Can you add more to the question about who was Jim Thorpe?
Sure, Cindy. I interviewed over 200 people who knew Jim and tape-recorded the interviews. I hitchhiked 12,000 miles through 23 states, and I interviewed former presidents, and I interviewed people living in deepest poverty. I interviewed family members. I'm the only one given access to his Jim's private papers. And I think what speaks volume, Cindy, is that of all those people, no one turned me down.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, I felt, had two feelings about Jim. One is that they admired him as a person and, as Bill said, the world's greatest athlete. But they also felt very angry, sad, fill in the blanks of what happened to him. And I think, truthfully, they saw in me a vehicle, a potential vehicle, to rewrite the truth about Jim, to dispel a lot of the myths and the cruel stereotypes that have been written about him, and to really give him a fair shake in history. What they didn't bargain for, nor did I, until after I had finished the biography, I found that literally, I couldn't sleep at night, and by this time I was married, and my wife shared my feeling of of outrage and sadness the way Jim's Olympic gold medals were stripped from him and his name erased from the record books. So the two of us basically quit our jobs and worked full-time. We started a group called the Jim Thorpe Foundation, and we enlisted some of the most powerful political figures, Indian leaders, and sports legends in the world to help exonerate Jim. And thankfully, we were able to do that, and his name is now back in the history book, the official Olympic history book, and his gold medals were returned to his children.
Well, we all know, well, not all of us, but most of us know the story of Jim Thorpe, and we watched the movie, and he is a very famous figure from U.S. and world history. But what gave you this passion to write about his story and help, you know, him get posthumous justice like this?
I'm glad you asked that, because I'm hoping some of your younger listeners will read, and a lot of times young people are not into reading as much as they were when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad gave me a book when I was 10 years old, and it listed the greatest athletes in the world, and I read about Babe Ruth, and I read about Bobby Jones and all the greats, the Jack Dempseys, but one stood out, and that was Jim, because he excelled in so many different sports. Many people don't know he was the first president of the National Football League. He was the greatest professional football player of the century, and as also a two-time All-American in college, and then went on to play in the major leagues for 7 years. And the passion really started seriously with one letter I received, because I was so interested in finding out about him, that I wrote to the top 10, in my opinion, sports historians, asking where I could find information about Jim Thorpe. And only one wrote back to me, but I have it in the front of my book, and it was sent by Colonel Alexander M. Wayand, who was a teammate of President Eisenhower, and these two gentlemen competed against Jim Thorpe when West Point played Carlisle, the team Jim played for, the Carlisle Indian School. But in his letter, he said that more lies have been written about Jim Thorpe than any football player in history. And he said these lies have been repeated by Grantland Rice and Arthur Daly. So what a challenge, Cindy, for me to dispel those lies, because Messrs. Rice and Daly were Pulitzer Prize winners. And come to find out, much of what they wrote about Jim was made up and was very cruel in its implications of what he did when he really didn't do that. But I was able to be inspired by that letter.
Well, okay, so I have a question now for both of you, and we'll start with Bill. In the 50s, a film was made about Jim Thorpe, starring the legendary Burt Lancaster, who portrayed him in the movie Jim Thorpe, All-American.
Yeah.
The focus of the film seemed to be the extreme prejudice that Jim Thorpe faced his entire life. Would you say that Thorpe has come to symbolize Native Americans in the struggle for equality in the United States?
Yes, I do. I think the movie was a great movie. Dad was a technical director on that movie, and so a lot of the things that are in there were approved by Dad, and I think Burt Lancaster also did a wonderful job in portraying Dad, and the story is true.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was there any controversy? Was there anything in it that your dad didn't approve of, or was there things in it that he wished things that weren't in it that he wished were in it?
I think Dad, being a technical director on the program, pretty much went through the story itself and approved and disapproved things as they went. So anything else that came through was approved by him.
Okay, that's good to hear. Bob, can you answer that question about, has Jim Thorpe come to symbolize Native Americans in the struggle. And with your, I'm talking to Jim Thorpe's son and to his biographer, and as a subject that is very, known to many people, but like Bob said, there might be some young people who don't know the story. Did you think the movie was fair to Jim Thorpe's life? And does he symbolize Native Americans in the struggle for equality?
Well, I think this we could devote a whole program to that. It's a great question, Cindy. What Bill says is absolutely true, and Jim was a technical advisor. Having said that, Burt Lancaster himself admitted that it was more R-E-E-L life than R-E-A-L, and that's only because in the context of 90 Minutes, factually, it wasn't accurate in terms of a lot of the a lot of the experiences that he had. A lot of those were kind of a Hollywood fabrication of that. However, it did follow the line of truth in terms of his excelling in football at Carlisle, his winning the gold medals at the Olympics, as Bill said, mm-hmm. And his being stripped of those medals. So the heart and soul of his story in terms of the major events, the major facts, they were true. Having said that, what was and it's again, it's a great question because a lot of people have focused on Jim's athletic career and very few people have paid attention to what he did after he retired. And what he did has not gotten enough attention, in my opinion. He was in about, not about, in exactly 76 motion pictures in Hollywood. But what people don't know, because he wasn't one to brag and to tell his own accomplishments ever, but it was the most influential person in Hollywood in the late 30s and early 40s in getting Indians to play Indian roles in the movies. Burt Lancaster, as you said earlier, was a great man, and we spent quite a long time discussing Jim Thorpe because Jim Thorpe was his hero too. Your listeners might be interested. One conversation I had one time, I was meeting with President Reagan and his top American Indian lawyer. They were in the same room, and each man looked at one another and asked one another the same question. They said, "Who is your greatest hero?" And they both answered, "Jim Thorpe." So as Bill said, he was a happy individual, and he just was very, very generous. And I think a lot of times that part of the story has not been told.
Well, let's go back to Bill. And your father attended the famous and infamous Carlisle Indian School. Can you give us some insight on how that experience helped shape his life?
Well, Dad wasn't too much for school. I mean, he kept running away and stuff like that from schools and one thing another. And his father put him finally at Carlisle because of the distance from Carlisle to Oklahoma. And once Dad got there and started learning the ways and what the school represented, he kind of stuck by most of the years that he was there and got interested naturally in the sports. I don't think that the school itself treated the Indians properly as
right.
such. A lot of the kids, when they came in, for instance, haircuts, it meant a lot to a lot of the Indians to have the long hair and the braids and things like that. When they come to this school, they automatically they cut their hair off. And then they tried to get them to not speak any Indian language whatsoever. They tried to keep them to have them speak to strictly the white man's way. And they had, for some of the Indians and things like that, that ran away from school because of the not liking the school. They had people that went out and brought them back, and they had a jail
at
the school. And the kids were put in this jail, including my dad a couple of times. And it's not a happy thing. There's a cemetery full of the dead kids that resulted from a lot of this. So
I studied American history, so I studied a little bit about the Carlisle School too. Just
right.
Terrible stories. Does your dad? Did you remember anything specifically that your dad said about the school?
No, not really. You gotta consider I'm 83 years old.
Yeah.
And that was back in 1928 before I was even born. Really, he didn't really speak, too many things that I could remember.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back to Bob for a second. Thank you, Bill. Referring to the movie, Jim Thorpe, All-American, first of all, I find it interesting that you said that, Jim Thorpe was instrumental in getting actual Native Americans to play parts of, in movies that required Native Americans to play them, and then a white person played him in his movie. But many people in the United States, if you say Pop Warner, they know exactly, who you're talking about. There's Pop Warner football, and he's become legendary in American football. What role, good or bad, did Pop Warner actually play in the real story of Jim Thorpe?
You have the best question, Cindy. That's another very long answer, but he was portrayed in the movie as a very kindly, grandfatherly person, and that really was not the case. I think the crux of the most important aspect that he played in Jim's life was when the chips were down and Jim was accused of being a professional athlete. By all accounts, I interviewed Pop's secretary. Pop could have defended Jim. Jim at the time was a ward of the government. Was 1913. The Indians were not given citizenship status until 1924, and yet Jim got a letter from President Taft praising him for being the highest type of American citizen. The hypocrisy was rampant in terms of Jim and his teammate. I interviewed his roommate on the Olympics, Abel Kiviat. At the age of 99, I interviewed Abel. And they slept in steerage going over to the Olympic Games in 1912. The Olympics had evolved into a playground for rich white boys. And if you were a minority or not of a well-to-do family, you did not get the same respect and treatment. And the college athletes of Jim's day very regularly would play pro ball on Sunday after playing college ball on Saturday, only they would change their names. Jim did not come from a culture where this was told to him. And again, Pop Warner sent him the key point is that Pop Warner sent Jim, Joe Libby, and Jesse Youngdeer, three athletes from Carlisle, to play summer ball in Rocky Mount, North Carolina. And that is what caused Jim to lose his Olympic medals, because he did play baseball during the summer and did receive $2 a game, but again, he did it innocently. And history has ignored Pop Warner's role in that, and he didn't help out. I'm going to mention one quick thing. I think this will resonate with your listeners, that you were talking to Bill about Carlisle. Jim also went when he was younger to Haskell, and the president of Haskell, a couple of years ago, their 150th anniversary, she says, we're not going to call this a celebration. We're going to call this a commemoration. And that comes to the heart of your question, Cindy, because she said that in the early days of Indian education in this country, it's something that people should be very ashamed of, the way the Indians were
scandalous.
Treated.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's scandalous the way that they've been treated since white Europeans came on this continent. We just want to get to two very important things before our time runs out. The struggle to have Jim Thorpe buried where he wanted to be buried in Oklahoma, and then the upcoming 2012 Olympics, which will be the 100-year anniversary of Jim Thorpe's participation in 1912. So, Bill, I want you to talk about what happened when your father passed away and your struggle to have him buried in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I was in the service coming back from Korea, and when Dad passed away, and when I got home went to his where they were showing his body, talked to different people there and things, but we decided to take him to Oklahoma and put him to rest in Oklahoma. That's where he wanted to be put to rest. And mm-hmm. so that's what happened. We moved his body to Oklahoma. During the first ceremony, we had a Catholic burial celebration. And then afterwards, in the evening, they had the Indian burial. We were at the burial and having dinner with Dad's body in there to celebrate his going and to make a happy occasion out of it. And at that particular time, Patsy and the Hearst and the police came in and took his body during the ceremony.
And Patsy, his body to and who's Patsy?
Yeah, that was my dad's third wife.
Okay. I knew that, but I wanted my listeners to hear that.
Yeah, right. And she moved his body to Tulsa, and then she went out and tried to farm his body off to different people, like in Carlisle and Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, and different areas. And I guess somebody called her and told her about Machuk and East Machuk, Pennsylvania, that they were willing to take Dad's body. This is all fine and good. We still have no bad feelings against the town of Machuk and Pennsylvania. They named Dad Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania. We were, they've done a good job of doing all the things that's necessary on Dad's part. In the earlier days, I guess when they first brought him in, they really didn't work too hard to do anything at the site.
Mm-hmm.
I appeared there one time and was very disappointed because the place wasn't mowed. There's a lot of weeds and different things that were at the place, and I was disappointed on what I saw. But that was only the one time that I was there. I understand later on they have changed and put statues and things like that up. But,
well, what is the legal status of the case in reclaiming his body and having it buried in Oklahoma?
Right now, we have our lawyer has indicated that there might be a decision made before the end of the year, and hopefully that will happen.
Okay, great. Well, we wish you very, very good luck on that. But, Bob, let's turn to the future now and the Olympics in 2012 and what spotlight you hope will be focused on Jim Thorpe as an athlete and a representative of the Native Americans who have been slighted throughout history.
Well, even before then, Cindy, the National Football League, through a program called Super Learning, the host committee in Indianapolis for the 2012 Super Bowl has chosen Jim Thorpe as the role model for the 2012 Super Bowl. So that, of course, is in February. And then, as you stated, in July, the Olympics, we are hoping that that there will be a ceremony. There will be some discussion. That's all in the very early stages. One of our hopes is to have the King of Sweden be present. This is an interesting fact, again, I think for your younger listeners or for your dyed-in-the-wool sports fans, that the term world's greatest athlete, we see it in the headlines every 4 years at the Olympics, but what they might not know is that started in 1912 when the King of Sweden, overwhelmed with emotion, according to all the eyewitnesses, witnessed this man competing in 15 different events and in the pentathlon, decathlon, as Bill said, and winning both events. His voice shook with emotion when he said to Jim, "Sir, you are the greatest athlete in the world." And so ever since then, Cindy, the Summer Olympic decathlon champion has been hailed as the world's greatest athlete, but that's where it started. So hopefully there will be some celebration in London in 2012.
Well, I wish you luck on the case and the proper reburial of Jim Thorpe and having him deservedly recognized in 2012 at the Olympics, and congratulations on the Super Bowl thing. Not a huge sports fan, but I am a fan of Jim Thorpe and you know, the courage and integrity he showed through all of his trials and tribulations, and it's been an honor having you both on the show. But is there some place where my listeners can get more information on your book and all of the causes that you are championing?
I would thank you so much. You're so thoughtful, because this weekend my son is launching a website called Jim Thorpe Rest in Peace. But what I would say, if it would be permissible to give out my email address.
Sure, if it's okay with you.
Well, thank you. It's Bob Wheeler, WRC, at gmail.com. So it's BOBWHEELERWRC at gmail.com. My wife and I were able, back in the 80s, to gather 3.5 million signatures for people to help exonerate Jim Thorpe in the Olympic record books and his gold medals, as I mentioned, to his children. And we are hoping to surpass that with getting the word out to the American people and, in fact, people throughout the world, that Jim Thorpe, as Bill said, the people of Jim Thorpe, I know many of them, they're wonderful people, well-meaning, but I do think that a man's wish as to where he wants to be buried, as combined with his religion, to be buried in his native soil, I feel that should trump everything. And so that's what we're going to be working toward. And as I said, that will be up this weekend. But in the meantime, they could email me at any time. And thanks for that opportunity.
No problem. Bill, did you have anything to add before the interview is over?
Other than that I want to tell everybody that I appreciate Bob Wheeler and Flo for all the things that they've been doing in Dad's name. They're great people.
Well, thank you so much, Robert Wheeler and William Thorpe, for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Cindy.
Thanks, Cindy.
We'll keep posted about your ongoing struggles and hope to be your victory soon.
Thank you.
Well, that was our show today. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you learned something. I know that I did, and we will not have a show next week because I am going to CUBA. Don't tell the authorities, because I'm already in enough trouble as it is right now. But as always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my producer, Mikey, my guests, Bob Wheeler and Bill Thorpe, and you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan, and you've been listening to CindySheehanSoapbox.com. Peace out.
I must make my witness. to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.